Honestly, I turned off Alex's channels, my subscriptions, because it was too much stuff all the time. He was in my feed too much, and it was seldom relevant to anything that I cared about. So, I'm not looking for, how to have, an inexpensive Chipotle protein meal for under $5 and stuff like that. I mean, just I don't care. And I think what happens is that if it's quality versus quantity. If you're chasing everybody, then you're gonna maybe even turn off your core audience, because I'm certainly, I think, an audience that Alex would want to reach. But I just was like, pretty much none of this is of interest to me. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Business Lunch Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Roland Frazier, and my wonderful co-host and business partner, Ryan Dice, is also with us. Ryan, what are you up to today?
I'm excited to have a normal week. You know what I did this weekend?
What did you do this weekend?
I did absolutely nothing.
Me too. How
Dude.
does how did that manifest itself? What nothingness did you do?
So for the past month, I have had, I mean, you know this, I've got a senior in high school. He's graduating, and it's the end of the school year, and any parent of school-age children knows that there is not a worse time of your life than the end of April and the first part of May. Because it's all the final projects, it's all the banquets and awards, everybody's throwing parties, all the last tech, it's like everything all culminates all at once. And when you got four kids like I do, it's absolutely miserable. And on top of that, we also have two of my kids' birthdays are middle to end of April. So it's just nuts. Like just absolutely insane. But Emily and I, my wife and I, we were talking at the end of last week, and we're like, "What do we have this weekend?" She's like, "I don't really have anything." I was like, "Huh? Like, well, maybe I'll go take the boy, like go play golf." She's like, "Yeah, that'd be nice." But then it just poured down rain. So, dude, I'm not exaggerating. On Saturday, I woke up like at 6 a.m. like I always do, but we just sat in bed until noon, and I read and I wrote. I wrote a 46-page report this weekend because I just had the time.
That sounds like business, though. So you businessed.
Yeah, but I mean, I can't literally sit there and do nothing, but I got to do something that was important, non-urgent. And so
Okay.
it was great. It was beautiful. That's what I did. What about you? So you haven't been as busy either?
I didn't have, no, I irresponsibly have decided that I'm not going to work on the weekends so much anymore. So I say irresponsible, but that you really shouldn't have to do that all the time. And my wife, as you know, just had surgery, and so she's still recovering, so she can't really do much of anything. It was also here, kind of just a really mopey, gloomy kind of weekend
Same.
weather-wise.
It was
And
gray and
so,
drizzly. It was like, it was a day that just called for sitting in bed and doing nothing.
I also can't help but get up early and everything. But then I just worked on I've got some projects that I'm doing around here, musically with my studio and stuff like that. So I just kind of worked on plotting all that stuff out. I watched a whole bunch of YouTube videos. We did went through a complete mini series of something on television in between all of that. And so it was just very, very chill, but it's actually nice. And it was good. It definitely puts you coming into this week with like feeling a bit refreshed, right?
Yeah, it's been a grind. It's been a grind of late. And I get it. All this is a privilege to be able to do it. But I did like, I do enjoy the work, and I enjoy reading, and I enjoy writing. It was so to me, it didn't feel like work. But yeah, now that I mentioned, as I hear myself say it out loud, it's like, oh, yeah, that probably was a lot of work, but it was fun
The
work.
good
So
news
that's not
the good
grinding.
news is that you like what you do and you didn't even realize it was work, right?
Bingo. Exactly. So anyway, what's on the docket today? What's going on in your
Well,
world?
you said you were reading something about the creators and their opinions on content and things like that, I think.
Oh yeah. Okay. So a couple things. One, our mutual buddy Alex Hormozi, who we've known since forever, but obviously in the last few years, he's a name that's probably known to most of our listeners because dude's just blown up on all kinds of channels. Like he made the decision he was going all in, going pro in during COVID, and he really used that time to just go nuts and blow up on TikTok and on Instagram Reels and his YouTube channel, and you know, just has done really, really, really well. And so it's been interesting though, because you know, again, we're buddies, and we, you know, we'll chat back and forth. And he put out this this piece, this video that kind of has gone a little bit, I don't say viral, but it definitely has got a lot of people talking in the business world and in the influencer space, because he essentially said, I'm going to stop doing entertainment style videos. I'm just going to shift all of my focus back to education in an effort to grow his audience, which most people who are out there on the different social channels want to do. He's shifted from talking almost exclusively about business to I'm going to talk about cooking, and I'm going to talk about health, and I'm going to talk about, you know, how to, you know, what to do when you're in college. And he broadened his message for the sake of getting a lot of views and for the sake of getting more followers, which worked. But Alex is a data guy, and so when he went back and analyzed, he found that, you know, people who are watching videos on cooking, they don't necessarily ascend to then wanting to watch my business stuff. They just want to watch more cooking stuff. So he was essentially able to validate, and he broke this down in this video, that not all views are created equal, and that the grind of going out there and producing tons and tons of content just to grow the audience, if you're doing this as a business owner, not as a, you know, celebrity, not as an entertainer, if you're doing this to grow your business brand, it just wasn't worth it. And he tested the strategy, found that it wasn't worth it, is pivoting back. And so that happened. At the same time, I read this article in, you know, in Vox, titled "Everyone is a Sellout Now." And it's basically this article where they're interviewing all these creators who are, you know, lamenting the fact that they don't really have time to create anymore. They have time to do their art. They have to always, always, always produce for, you know, the TikTok, the Instagram, and the YouTube algorithms, because if they stop, they're going to disappear. And if they disappear, they don't make any money. So one person said, you're becoming worse at your art, but you're becoming a great marketer for a product which is getting increasingly less and less good because you're focusing on all this other stuff. So I just wonder if we're not going to start seeing a shift away from the I need to be everywhere all at once strategy to, you know what, maybe we shouldn't be chasing views. Maybe we should be talking to, you know, less, and maybe we should get okay with that. And I'm just curious, as someone who's invested a lot more in the, you know, social creator side of things than I have, what your take is on that.
Yeah, I, on the Alex thing, I think it's just common sense. I mean, it honestly, I turned off Alex's channels, my subscriptions, because it was too much stuff all the time. He was in my feed too much, and it was seldom relevant to anything that I cared about. So, yeah. You know, I'm not looking for, you know, how to have, you know, an inexpensive Chipotle protein meal for under $5 and stuff like that. I mean, just,
right.
I don't care. And I think what happens is that if you, you know, it's quality versus quantity. If you're chasing everybody, then, you know, you're gonna maybe even turn off your core audience, because I'm certainly, I think, an audience that Alex would want to reach. But I just was like, pretty much none of this is of interest to me.
So it's funny. He said, so I'm not sorry to interrupt, but he said one of the catalysts that led him to start looking at the data and make this change is a good friend of his. He didn't name the person, but probably somebody that we know who he really respected and who is his ideal client. You know, because Alex is like us. Alex wants to do deals. He wants to buy companies.
Yeah.
You know, he wants to be a part of like bigger things. So he's like, my ideal client said exactly what you said. Yeah, pretty much, you know, love you. I've just pretty much stopped watching your stuff because it doesn't apply to me anymore. So,
yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. Finish
too much. Too much. And also, for me, having somebody in my feed where I see their face 82 times and very little else is also too much. So, you know, but look what Grant Cardone did. You know, Cardone, who is one of Alex's mentors on that kind of stuff, said, you know, I think a long time ago, pulled up his thing, said, you want to be known? Look at my feed. Look, I'm everywhere all the time. You know, look at yours. I post 10 times as much as you do. If you want to get, you know, the kind of audience I've got, do that. But what I don't see Cardone doing is I don't see him posting a bunch of things that aren't relevant. He's either posting lifestyle stuff, which is basically aspirational, or he's posting content. So I think that's the key, is like all this artificially created clickbait kind of content, 10 ways to save money on your, you know, that stuff, particularly not appealing to your, you know, that is not directly targeted to appeal to your ideal audience to get them to do the ideal thing you want them to do. It's just a waste of your time, and it ultimately just annoys people and causes them to turn you off. So, and then you also attract, I mean, do you really want the person that needs to know how to have a $5 Chipotle meal? I mean, is that who you want? And what are you going to sell to them? Like, they're going to ascend and sell you their $100 million business? Unlikely. Okay, so because I now have a trackpad and my mouse was directly over the record button, which I clicked to start recording our episode, when I put my hand down while being excited about something, I hit the trackpad and stopped the recording. So you guys may have a small gap in what we were talking about, but we were talking about Alex Hormozi and Grant Cardone and how Cardone told Hormozi, you know, you got to be everywhere all at once. And he told our friend Frank Kern that, and he's told us that. And it's obviously worked for him. But sometimes it turns people off. And then you were saying something when I think I hit.
Yeah. So let's talk about Grant.
Yeah.
Cause I do think if we can get both Alex and Grant in the title of this podcast, this thing's going to go to the moon.
Viral.
We can have our own little, we'll go viral.
Ooh,
yeah. Right now. So let's talk about Grant. And say what you will about him and his style and all that kind of stuff. His strategy, he's looking to raise money from unaccredited investors.
Yeah.
Right? Like, now, again, you could say whether that's a good strategy or, you know, a bad strategy. I personally would not want to raise a bunch of money from a bunch of unaccredited investors. But, like, let's set that aside.
Yeah, it works.
His ideal client. Do what?
I said it works for him.
It works for him. And so his ideal client, his ICP, ideal client profile, is kind of anybody with any money who wants to invest with Grant.
Actually, I would go beyond and say it's too, like, if you look at what his content is, it's not a sophisticated investor at all. So it's not,
no.
It's basically somebody that's got a lot of money. You know, even look at some of the video titles that are designed to capture rappers, football players, you know, like really,
right.
Literally people who are not sophisticated investors that have high incomes that also aspire to kind of a flashy wealth lifestyle, right? That, like, I want more so that I can get private planes and all that kind of stuff. So that, like, I would say that's, and to me, that's not critical at all. It's just like, that's what I see him targeting. And it kind of makes sense because sophisticated investors will be repelled by that, which is good,
right?
Because he gets to polarize. And then he's, you know, he can talk about all the fancy toys and stuff. And everybody's like, yeah, I want that. If I want that, I got to be invested in the kind of stuff he invests in. You know, I can't get that in my 6% risk-free, you know, money market fund. So let me invest with Grant. It's a pretty smart strategy. And all of that content is appealing to them. Nobody else, as far as I'm concerned.
And that's the key, right? And I think that's the first thing that you gotta acknowledge is number one, getting clear on who is your audience. And then making stuff for that audience. And if you want to change your audience, that's fine. Just be intentional about it. I've got a friend of mine who was a touring musician, like not like world famous or anything like that, but definitely was out there, you know, playing in shows and stuff like that.
Okay.
And
it's Sting, guys. It's Sting. Okay, fine.
It's Sting. Yeah, it's Sting. Gentleman by the name of Eric Clapton. No. Not a name that anybody would know. In all honesty, I can't even remember the name of his band. So if I could, and this was like 10 years ago anyway. So what he said was an interesting observation because we were talking about sellouts and like artists, quote unquote, you know, selling out. And he said, I can tell you when you make the decision to go from playing in clubs and bars to playing in like an arena and not like not that you necessarily make the decision when you're able to do that. Your music fundamentally changes. Like the style of music that would fill a bar, you know, or a small club will not fill an arena, right? And so you need to change your music both to accommodate the space, but also to accommodate the fact that you got more people who maybe, you know, don't just want the bar club music. And so you'll see bands will make a big change. Now, when they move to stadiums, like you look at Taylor Swift, you want to, if you want to capture a stadium level audience, you have to produce fundamentally different music. And yet there are some artists, musicians who say, you know what, I'm fine always playing in bars and smaller venues. I think about like, you know, a Neil Young or Pearl Jam or something like that. Not that they play in like tiny venues or anything like that, but they're basically like, we're okay, we're totally fine only playing to our audience. And if that means that it doesn't grow dramatically, then we're okay with that, but we're going to talk to our people. I think the mistake that people make is they just say, I want a bigger audience, and they either don't adjust their content accordingly so their audience doesn't get bigger, or they do, and they find that, well, I don't want this bigger audience. I just wanted a larger audience of the people that I already have. Well, that's not how it works. Yeah. And so I think the thing that Grant does that is smart is he is intentional about who he has, and he produces the kind of content that'll attract him. I think a lot of people who are trying to mimic what Grant and some of these other big folks are doing, like Mr. Beast, yeah. Like who's his audience?
Yeah.
Humans,
yeah.
Freaking everybody.
Everybody.
If you're mimicking him for your YouTube strategy and you're selling a niche product or a B2B kind of thing, I'm not saying you can't learn things from him, but it's foolish to assume that that kind of strategy is going to work.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I think that's it. So that, like, to me, the message in that first thing with Alex that we're talking about is that if you want more, if you want to reach more of your ideal target market, you've got to create messaging and content that is targeted to appeal to that market. And that going broad is a mistake because your goal isn't to get fans. Your goal is to get followers. And what you mentioned about Damon John, who's one of our business partners, I think is the same thing. We did a mastermind with Damon, and we were all excited about it because, like, we're really good at masterminds, and Damon has a huge audience of millions of people on social. And we were unable, despite significant marketing efforts to his audience, we were unable to get as many people from that audience to join the mastermind as we were to get from our own significantly smaller audience.
Orders of magnitude smaller.
Yeah, I would guess, you know, 4% maybe of his audience, right, is what we've got. Yeah. But what we've got is we've got people who follow us to consume the information that we, you know, put out there and to benefit from it. And that's really what our messaging is about. And his is too. I'm not saying his isn't to benefit, but his is a much broader, let me get you started, let me help you find money because of Shark Tank. That's what really he drives people who are fans of the show, fans of him and the other sharks. And really, they're, you know, a good bit of them that are interested in actually doing anything want him to invest in their stuff. That's not what we were trying to do. We were trying to get the people who already had businesses, who respected somebody who's been as successful as Damon has, coupled with, you know, hopefully the good stuff we could add too, to, you know, to put just a couple hundred people in a high-end mastermind, and we're unable to do it from his audience. We basically had to use our audience because I think out of all the people we got what, maybe one, two? I think two tops. I want to say it's one person from his audience, because it's not the right message that's going out to those people to attract the people that have $10 million and larger businesses. And so I think that's a really good example. And Damon's got a great relationship with that audience. He provides them with tremendous benefit. He's got heavy engagement, and he is popular. You know, he is like popular, like he has true celebrity, general, what I would call general celebrity.
Right.
And so that isn't enough, even though his celebrity is also niched to people who are interested in, you know, getting money. If you try to put a different thing into there, it's very, very difficult to identify the people in that market, if they even exist, who want to do the other thing, you know, who have the thing that you're not marketing to. So I think that's the big lesson there is, you know, yeah. And I, you know, and whenever I get that kind of content that is irrelevant from somebody I follow, it's not long before I don't pay attention to them anymore. I'll mute them. I'll unfollow them. You know, usually if it's somebody that is a friend, I'll mute them just so, you know, they don't feel like I unfollow them.
They don't see.
But that's not what you want, right? I think like I want, so then you have to say, well, if I want to grow my audience, how do I do that? And then we can get to the second, because to me, this is a two-part conversation we're having. Part one is, what's your messaging that you should be putting out there to get the audience that you want? It's got to be know your audience first and just give them more of what they want and don't try to appeal to everybody else, because you're going to ultimately drive away the people that you want. So I think that's takeaway one. Then we get to the content treadmill. So how do you want to start into that? I got lots of thoughts on it, but I know you do too.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think don't, well, why don't you go? Because I mean, you having been on said treadmill,
yeah,
you know, before, I think you have more specific direct insight.
Yeah, so I had the benefit of being absolutely nobody and coming into, you know, your world and staying behind the scenes for the longest time and then saying, you know, hey, you know, as you and Perry one time were having a fight, both saying, well, we can just go do our own thing. And I'm like, well, that kind of screws me as one of your business partners because you guys have your own brand. So yes, you can. And then, glad I invested in this a week ago. But I remember that conversation. It was really funny. So I was like, well, it's going to be good for me to go get a brand. How do I do that? I've got to do it. I decided, to do a podcast, to start a podcast, to pay attention to my socials. And, you know, and that initially was just kind of putting up anything. Then it was putting up stuff that I thought people would like. But then I you know, looking at Cardone and listening to him and other people, it's like, well, you've got to have a regular content schedule. And Chris Crone, who kind of helped me understand that as well. And so I got on, okay, well, every Monday I'm going to do content for 4 hours. I'm going to create, you know, all this content. And then it's going to be, we're going to research the week before, the team's going to research it and we're going to post it up and, you know, slice and dice it and put it out on native format to all the different places. And it worked. But I hated it. I truly hated it. Like I hired people who had helped all the people that we know, do great things. And if I was willing to be a slave to the content wheel, that would have, I'm sure, worked, but I really, really didn't like it. And so what I've kind of, you know, and I, so to comment to the people that say my core art or thing is getting worse because I don't have the time to devote to it because I have to devote so much time to content. If you are on the content wheel and you decide that you've got to release that much content to get what you want, then yeah, that's going to happen. And it's really hard, but that's a, you know, too bad. That's the job you chose. You know, I chose to be an investment banker and I hate investment banking. I chose to be, you know, a musician and I hate playing the songs that were my hits over and over and over. Well, I mean, you get to decide. So now beyond that, I would say you don't have to be on that content wheel because what I have at least found and seen with other people who have much bigger audiences than I do, if you produce great content, I've got a friend of one of my sons who's a giant, giant YouTuber. I mean, like, you know, millions and millions of subscribers. And he only produces like a video a month. And it's an amazing, he works tirelessly on it, like probably more than any of the people that are producing the daily stuff that I've seen. Like he obsesses over it. And then everybody waits and it's like a drop. You know, when his thing comes out, everybody's like, oh, it's the new video. You know, got to go see that. There are several people that I follow that have, you know, 400,000 to a million plus subscribers who release maybe a 1 to 2 videos a month. And so they're really good though. Like they're really good. And so they get to work on that art. And even like, if you talk to them, they're like, man, it's a lot of work to do 2 videos that are really good a month. It takes a lot of time and effort. And they're not, they're mostly YouTube. They're on, and have decent followings on Instagram, but, and TikTok, but not really, like YouTube's their primary thing. But I think that the key is that if you produce great content, then your audience will tell other people about it and people will find you. And if you advertise that content, people will come. For me, the adjustment that I have made, which has been really hard because I had to let a lot of the people that we hired go that were, you know, content wheel people because they didn't understand this or didn't agree with it. But if you create content anyway, and your content can be incidental to what you're already doing, then to me, that's the ultimate. So for me, I do a coaching call once a week for AI that is a passion of mine. And I do a coaching call once a week for business acquisitions, sales, and growth. And on each of those roughly hour and a half calls, there's 1 to 4 10-minute plus segments where I'm detailed helping somebody, breaking down on a whiteboard, maybe having a conversation about live deals. And so I told the content team, I said, look, between that, speaking at our multiple masterminds, which we have at least 12 of combined a year, and our big events, which we have 2 of a year, there's more than enough content to get 24 or so pieces of 10-minute plus high quality content out of what I do without even intending for it to be done for any of the social media channels. So if you can take that.
Well, last I checked, we also do a podcast a couple times a week. Just throwing that out there.
What's the name of it?
I forget.
Okay. All right. I forgot about that. Yeah, exactly. Right. So there's all this great, but in fairness, this gets released on its own YouTube channel and everything. So it's not as, it's not as good, but I mean, it could be good for shorts.
It's not as Rolandy.
Yeah. It could be good for shorts, but anyway, like, so if you've got anything that you're doing and I you know, my son who works with me, can take B-roll of, cause he's with us for pretty much anything that would be aspirational. We're doing, we went on a, you know, a trip, he's there, he can shoot, you know, some of that stuff. So between that, I don't really have to do that 4 hour every Monday. I'm going to sit down and, you know, figure out what to talk about this week kind of thing. And it works really, really well. So that, I think that's something to think about is, can you have content that you create in fulfilling the things that you do out there in the world that you enjoy so that it can take the place of having to have a scheduled, fabricated, artificial kind of content creation obligation?
Yeah, it strikes me that there's always and has only ever been 2 models in the content entertainment game, show business, whatever you want to call it. And that is, you have to either be everywhere all at once or you have to be missed when you're gone.
Yeah.
Like, so you're either just always there all day, every day on the grind, and it's a part of what you're doing, or you put out work that is so impactful that after people have experienced it, they want more of it and it's not there. And so they'll patiently wait for it and then just gobble it up once it's there. And you see this with like A-list type celebrities where, you know, they're not on TV every single week, but you know, you get Tom Hanks or Brad Pitt, you know, one of these people comes out and they put out a new movie. And there are people who are just going to go and see it because they're in it. They haven't been there for a while. Certain directors, same thing. But it strikes me that most people on TV want to do movies. Why? Because you do a movie for a period of time and then you get a break, whereas TV is a grind. Most of the people who are doing movies, they want to be directors. Why? Because they don't want to have to be the people in front of the camera, you know, waking up early to do hair and makeup, to get out there and memorize their lines, right? Because it's a grind.
Yeah.
Most of the directors just want to be producers.
Yeah.
Why? Because what does a producer do? They write a freaking check and they hopefully get a bigger one back.
Right.
And so everybody's trying to work their way up the ecosystem in whatever the creator entertainment show business landscape is. And I think we're just starting to see that now with this new breed of entertainers. I think they're all coming to the same realization. So I think it's important as business owners, as entrepreneurs who've been told that you need a personal brand, just be really thoughtful about who you are modeling. Because I can tell you, I'm finally going to do it. I'm announcing it here. I am finally going to roll out a YouTube channel because that's what the world needs, is another freaking business guy talking about YouTube-y stuff. But I want to do it in part because I want to test out this theory of, can we do less but better content and have it actually work and get some traction. But I'm going to do something that most creators, entertainers are not willing to do, although some have been in the past. I'm willing to buy my way into the initial round of awareness. I'm willing to pay to amplify the content. And then at that point, if people want to stick around and watch more of it, if they like it, the algorithms will show them more of it. And if they don't, then that simply means it's not good enough. And so we'll have to go back to the drawing board and see if we can be, you know, and see if we can be better. But I think so many entrepreneurs and CEOs are modeling entertainers, and at the end of the day, they're just not that entertaining. And they need to just talk to their specific audience.
Yeah.
And be okay with that audience being small but meaningful. Be okay with playing in the bars and the clubs for probably a more valuable audience.
Yeah, so. I agree 100%. Yeah, I think it's cool. So the takeaways, if you agree with us, would be generally less content to your targeted audience less frequently, or let's say as frequent. You still do need to do it, I think, a couple times a month. But
if you want to be missed, you got to eventually show back up, or people completely forget about you. So the whole way that you're missed is you're there, you leave, and then you come back again at some point. So yes, there's got to be some consistency to it.
Yeah.
So hopefully, and I would also say, be willing to pay your way. Be willing to pay to play, right? Be willing to advertise. The algorithms are rewarding the Mr. Beast. You're no Mr. Beast. So you might need to pay a little bit to amplify, and that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay.
That didn't apply to you, Jimmy. I know you watched this, so Ryan didn't mean to address that to you. You are in fact Mr. Beast. So, but anyway, thank you guys for coming and hanging out with us today. If you found this valuable, please share it with a friend, and we'll see you next time on Business Lunch.
Hey, Roland Frazier here. If you're looking for a way to grow your business exponentially, to get more customers and ultimately increase your wealth, there's no faster way to do it than to acquire other businesses that already have the customers, products, services, teams, and media that you want. If you want to double your sales, just acquire a company that has the same sales as yours. It sounds simple, but far too many people end up starting new businesses that fail and forget that they could skip all the hard stuff and just acquire one that already exists. There's a reason why private equity firms, family offices, big companies like Apple, Google, and some of the smartest entrepreneurs on the planet do not start new businesses from scratch. They acquire already successful businesses. And when they do it, they instantly increase their sales, their profits. If they want market share, they increase that. They can get new products and services to offer all instantly. Hey, look, 90% of new businesses fail. 90%. Why not acquire an already successful business and increase your chances of success by 900%? What most people don't realize is you can acquire highly profitable businesses with no money out of your own pocket in pretty much any country in the world, regardless of your credit, and without having to go find a bunch of investors or needing any experience. Look, I've been acquiring businesses for over 30 years now, and I cover the whole process in my Epic Investing Strategy Training, and I want to give it to you 100% free. Just visit businesslunchpodcast.com/epic to get your free access to my Epic Investing Training right now while it's available.